It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. It seems we hear about Facebook almost every day, but does anyone remember Friendster? I'm laughing just thinking about it. I haven't even thought of Friendster in years. Why do some companies strike gold while others simply strike out? I'm joined now by Carnegie Mellon University instructor Sean Amirati. He is author of The Science of Growth, How Facebook Beat Friendster and How 9 Other Startups Left the Rest in the Dust. Mr. Amirati knows whereof he speaks on this, having sold his company to LinkedIn, and he joins us now in our studios. Sean Amirati, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
What separates the companies that succeed from those that fail? How do they do it?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's easy to look at these companies and assume that just one got lucky and the other one didn't. But one of the things as you look at how we teach entrepreneurship over the last years is I think we've gotten really good at teaching entrepreneurs and therefore helping startups go from the idea phase to really solving a problem for a target customer. I would say over the last 15 years that I've been involved in entrepreneurship, we've gotten good at giving people best practices for this. And really the goal for this book, which came out of feedback from some of my students on campus, was to give the same kind of best practices to go from solving that problem for a target customer to scaling up and ultimately changing the world, which is ultimately why entrepreneurs embark on this journey.
Is part of the problem, and one of the things you mentioned in the book is how Pepsi gained an advantage over Coke, which they had trailed for years, and it was about, you know, accessing the product, making the consumer more comfortable, and avoiding that one bad experience that, if that happens, that may sink you. Is that a key?
Yeah. So what we try to do is we try to give people three phases of growth that a company goes through and help them understand the best practices at each of those three phases. And the Pepsi Coke example to me is a really good non-startup example, right? These aren't tech startups. These are just large companies, but non-startup example of how you can use data to inform your decisions, but not also become overly reliant on it, right? So it'd be easy to go and just try to optimize the process of, you know, squeezing 5 more sales out of each local retailer. But through the process of doing some ethnographic research and ultimately come up with a different bottle, they really changed the whole landscape, which the competition between Coke and Pepsi was based on.
Is there a common theme in these startup companies and how they defeat their competitors?
Yeah, there is. The book title references Facebook versus Friendster, but we actually look at 10 pairs of companies where one took off and one didn't, where they're in a similar market. And we look at, across those 10 pairs, what are these common patterns? So not just Facebook Friendster, but Tesla Fisker, McDonald's White Castle, right? So we go back into history and look at these as well. And what we've found is that there are certain things you need to do at the beginning, which we call kind of the prerequisite. So just like you can't do calculus before you know algebra, you can't focus on scaling before you satisfy these prerequisites. Then once you satisfy those, there's the second phase, which are these what we call catalyzing events, or things that really help the world catch up with the vision that entrepreneur has. And then ultimately, these things that you need to do to sustain that rapid rate of growth that these high growth companies are going through.
So, and as you mentioned, you place Facebook and Friendster in the title of your book.
Yep.
So tell us about the rivalry here and how Facebook went on to win, but really to crush its competition.
Yeah, so Facebook is a company, and a lot of the companies studied are, where either directly they have network effects, or even if they don't have network effects, they end up creating what we call secondary network effects, so that ultimately the first to scale has a huge competitive advantage. In the case of Facebook versus Friendster, one of the things that's really obvious is that the Facebook management team, board, investors, they were all focused on the right things at the right point in time. So there's lots of stories going back where you hear the Friendster board very concerned about lots of secondary things when the product just doesn't work at all. On the other hand, you know, Facebook was laser focused on creating a magical user experience at first just for a very constrained group of people, right? College students. If you think back far enough, you couldn't get a Facebook account without a .edu email address at one point, right? And then as they sort of unlocked value and continued to grow, they really focused on the right things at each point in that company's development to really help them scale up and ultimately create such a meaningful company today.
How did you decide which companies to analyze for your book? I mean, Facebook and YouTube seem pretty obvious,
sure.
But less people might think of WordPress or LinkedIn.
Sure, or McDonald's and White Castle for that matter, right? So the answer is it really was driven by student research on campus. So the way this course came to be is I'd been teaching a course on campus for years called Lean Entrepreneurship, which is a very popular graduate course to help entrepreneurs come up with their first idea and refine it and launch it as a business. And many of those same students said, hey, what we really want to do for a variety of different reasons, which will take longer than we have today, many of us are not going to leave CMU and start a company. Some of us certainly will. But a lot of us are going to leave CMU and go join a high growth company. And we'd love to get the same type of practical applied learning that we're getting in your entrepreneurship course for this how do you scale up ventures. And so I thought that was a cool thing to think about. So I started working with great students from my Lean course to actually build out these case studies. And then as more and more of these case studies were put together, we started to see these common patterns, which we highlight in the book using the case studies as stories to illustrate them.
You yourself co-founded a company, which you eventually sold to LinkedIn. So tell us about that experience and how it helped you in writing this book.
Yeah, so I actually started three companies. The second one is the one you mentioned, MSpook, which we sold to LinkedIn. You know, the MSpook story was great. I think we did some things well. I think other things that I wish I would have known now, and tried to incorporate that into the book as well. So, you know, I think entrepreneurship is one of the most powerful things people can do with their careers. I think entrepreneurs really are people who create the world the way the world ought to be, and create products and services that make the world the way the world ought to be. That's sort of how they do that. And so from my perspective, one of the greatest things I can do is try to get more people interested in entrepreneurial thinking and then try to increase the success rate of those startups that are those people who embark on this journey. And, you know, between my day job as a partner at a venture firm here in Pittsburgh, teaching at Carnegie Mellon and now writing this book and doing lots of fun conversations like this, I try to, you know, different levels of interaction, but in each of those cases, try to help people make the world the way it ought to be through entrepreneurial thinking.
One thing I want to ask you, we're running out of time here, but in the last 30 seconds or so that we have, hopefully you can do it. In your book, you give out the terms data-informed and data-driven. What is the difference between the two?
Yeah, so the basic idea here is that you can ignore data completely, right? Or you can become completely reliant on data. But to me, the blend of business expertise plus quantitative data is the magical moment, which is what we call being data-informed versus data-driven.
It's very interesting, and you can read more about it in the book by our guest. It's called The Science of Growth, How Facebook Beat Friendster and How Nine Other Startups Left the Rest in the Dust. The author is Sean Amirati, who is also, as you heard, an instructor at Carnegie Mellon University. It's been a great pleasure talking with you. Thanks so much for stopping by our studios today.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. If you missed any portion of the program or would like to revisit past segments, you can go to our website at wesa.fm. Until tomorrow, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.